This is Sounding Board Parenting, creating healthier human connections through the commonality of parenting, exploring the world of parenting with high-performing mums and dads from a range of backgrounds, industries, and family dynamics.
He said, the whole world looks different.
You can do it your way.
My life has been fundamentally altered by their existence.
I gotta tell you, kids don't stop learning.
That is how I change the story.
Babies are instant community generators.
My growth curve just like shot up after I had a kid.
I wasn't planning any of it.
Let's jump in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Sounding Board Parenting. I am pumped, excited, ecstatic, all in one to dive into the world of parenting today with Travis Saunders. Travis, welcome to the Sounding Board Parenting Podcast.
Thanks so much, Sean. It's great to be talking to you and great to be talking to another parent who's as passionate about looking after the health and well-being of the complete family unit as I am. So I, as you said, my name's Travis. I'm the dad to an incredible, beautiful 11-year-old autistic young boy whose name is Patch. And I'm the partner of it's a 20-year relationship so far. We're not married. One day we may actually do that, but her name's Fiona Churchman, and she is such a sensational person, an amazing mum.
That's awesome, mate. That's great. And I know that there's a fair few things going on for you guys at the moment, and you've done some amazing things as well. And I'm sure the modest person that you are, I've already got that vibe from yourself in our short chat before this, that I might just throw a few things out there that you have done along the way. So you are the presenter and the producer of an award-winning podcast called The Parenting Spectrum, which is housed through the ABC podcast app, which I think is epic, and I've listened to a few episodes and really enjoyed that. But just in terms of your journey as a family, you've done some amazing things with young Patch, and I'd love to touch on those as well. The cycling across the US, it sounds like one of the greatest ever father-son trips of all time, so it will be awesome to talk about that. Running the 12 marathons in 12 months for autism awareness, and what you're doing from a movement point of view with School of the Road, being on multiple boards now, I just think that the movement that you're contributing to is something that is really inspiring. So I just want to start this off by just saying thank you. I think people like yourself are a dime in a dozen, and it's great to, I feel privileged to be able to chat to you as well through the podcast. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks. And I guess one of the things I really like to talk about when I talk about parenting is my mistakes. And it's about me opening up and being a little bit real and raw and vulnerable to the listener, because I have made so many mistakes as a dad. And Fiona and I together as a couple will openly admit that we've made a lot of mistakes. And we're kind of those learners that we're guides, we're sponges. We like to absorb as much information as possible from those around us, other parents, community members, people who have kind of walked that path before us. And obviously research is a very important aspect in terms of understanding our son. Our son, he's beautiful. He's an angel. Everyone who meets him just thinks he's incredible. But he has some very significant and complex needs. He requires very substantial support 24 hours a day. And I guess if I look back and I look back at from the very beginning, and I don't like using the word journey, but right from the very early stages of when we started to notice that Patrick was developing very differently to his peers. And that was before he turned two. And it was around about 15, 16 months of age that we started to notice that Patch wasn't making eye contact. He was looking at ceiling fans all the time. He wasn't babbling. In the same sense as children of a similar age. And he wasn't socialising with any of his peers, going up to any of his peers in childcare. And so that led us eventually to going and getting an autism diagnosis. And initially, he was diagnosed with something which is called pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. Big tongue twister there, but it was on the autism spectrum. And these days, he's been reclassified under the DSM-5 or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual version 5 as being, you know, autistic. And it's something that we very much embrace in our family these days. But I think in those very early days, it was very confronting. It was a very worrying time. We didn't know what the future would look like for Patch, and we certainly didn't know what it would mean for our family and the way that our family would, you know, gel together and what our future would look like. And so we made some, I guess, early mistakes. And I can talk about it in terms of I regret some of the therapy that we did early on. And if I could turn back time, I'd make some changes with regards to some of that therapy that we do. When a child is diagnosed on the autism spectrum, parents obviously start to search and do their own research with regards to what those available therapies are out there. And of course, Fiona and I were no different. And even though that I'd worked in the field before and I had a good understanding, I was about to learn that my understanding was quite small, and that I would then continue to be a lifelong learner and make these mistakes along the way. And so we looked at early intervention and scientific, you know, evidence-based early intervention. What I wish I'd done at the time is started to learn more about my own son and my own son's needs, as opposed to a collective understanding of what was some of the science of principles that had worked for a collective group of individuals. What I really would wanted to have done, if any advice I give to parents these days, is that you've got to come up with your own child's evidence-based practice. And that takes time, because we don't know our kids. So these days I talk about it wanting to be, it has to be patch-based evidence practice and not, you know, early intervention or science-based best practice. And so I started to do the research early on, and we were looking at trying to make patch fit into our society. Whereas that shouldn't have been the thing we should have been doing at all. We should have been trying to make Patch the best version of himself and to embrace him and all of his glory and all of his neurodiversity. And so we looked at therapies that were deficit-based and that they were able to concentrate on weaknesses or in particular stages of development, as opposed to doing what we do these days, which is all about finding what Patch's strengths are and what Patrick's interests are, and then concentrating the therapy and his development in those core areas.
That's epic.
And so it is something that it makes me sad when I think about what we did in terms of some of that early intervention, because we thrive when we're giving opportunities. You know, as much as I do, Sean, if you're loving something that you're doing, you want to do more of it.
Yeah.
And therefore, that you can then develop those splinter skills and greater interests. And within those splinter skills and those interests, we then develop, you know, strengths, but we also have areas of weakness which are in those little core principles of our interests. But we're more motivated intrinsically to want to get up, get out of bed and have a crack and have a real hard go at trying to improve in those areas, as opposed to doing therapies which are more externally motivated, you know, offering reinforcers, you know, certificates, for example, or bribes in order to get, for example, you know, an employee to be able to achieve A, B, C, and D. And so these days I'm all about strengths and interests, and I'm sure I'll talk to you about something huge in this interview that we did based on that.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for providing that initial insight, and I really want to dive deeper into that as well. From your point of view, Travis, I always love asking this question as well. What roles do you feel like you currently play in life today?
Well, I guess I've got many roles across many different aspects of my life. I'm a partner.
Yeah.
To Fiona, and there's making sure that I am somebody that understands her and understands her job and understands how she feels about parenting and And I have to be a really good communicator to ensure that we're on the same wavelength. We actually understand each other's needs and that we're looking after each other's needs. Employment-wise, I've got the role of I'm an education advisor. I'm also an autism advocate and a disability advocate. I've been working in that field for many, many years. I run workshops for parents, and I run workshops for allied health professionals and educators to improve the relationships with parents so that they can actually have better outcomes for children with disabilities. There's so many things that I've done over the years, I often forget them, but these days I'm on the Australian Autism Research Council, and our role is to revise and devise the focus of where autism research should be for people on the autism spectrum in Australia, and that's a really exciting role to be involved in working with so many researchers and collaborating with parents and working side by side with autistic people that are doing such amazing work around the country. I'm also something I'm incredibly proud of is that, and obviously your listeners won't be able to see this, but you can see this. I'll explain it. I'm wearing a T-shirt, and it reads Autism Camp Australia, and I'm the vice chair of the board of Autism Camp Australia, and we run programs and camps in a couple of locations in Australia at the moment, based on the Sunshine Coast and also in Byron Bay, but soon. Around the rest of the country. So we're going to be based in many states around the country and run camps for autistic children, their siblings, and also their parents and caregivers and guardians. So there's three camps going on at the same time. so that's something that I'm incredibly passionate about.
I can see that.
Because I want to ensure that everyone's needs are looked after, and that we're able to bring people together who are like-minded souls. Even though our situations are very, very different, we have something that bonds us. And there's a kind of a core understanding of what our children mean to us and what we want to provide for our children. So an amazing board that I'm working with, and it will be a huge organisation in the future. And we already are. And we've only been operating just over 12 months.
Wow.
But when it comes to what is the thing that drives me every day, it's my son, Patch. And so my primary role in life is to be the best dad possible. And whilst I admit I've made a lot of mistakes, I learn from those mistakes and I try not to repeat those mistakes. And so he's actually my guide in life. He's taught me more than any parenting blog, website, individual researcher has ever taught me about parenting. And I think a lot of parents would probably think along similar lines. Even though we have our struggles, our kids are actually sometimes our teachers. And he's an incredible young fella. He's learning new things every day. And I recently had the opportunity to have a conversation with Patch a few months ago. He's what we would call an alternative communicator, or uses alternative forms of communication. He points to communicate. He uses an iPad to communicate. But in the last couple of years, I've been concentrating on teaching Patch to communicate using a stencil board which has numbers and letters on it. So it has the alphabet, and obviously has the numbers 1 to 10, multiplication and division, you know, kind of signs in it as well.
Yeah.
And I've been teaching him using a curriculum which is age-appropriate, and that's exciting, that's enthralling. So the whole concept of this is to teach him how to communicate through an exciting curriculum. And from that, he's been able to extend the conversation with me by talking about what his desires are in life and what his needs and what he wants. And so all of those things can be met, and he can have choice and control over his life, and therefore he can feel independent and feel embraced and feel loved and feel safe. And so we're sitting down there a little while ago, and I'd asked him, what do you want, Patch? What is it that you're after? And he started to spell. and spells out the letter I. Okay, and I write that letter down and goes W A N T. I want. Now, a bit of a kind of an understanding here is that this conversation is happening over 10 to 15 minutes. Patch has some motor planning differences, which affect his ability to be able to communicate in terms of the length of time it takes him to move his arm movements, but also the stability of his arm. So we have to give him that time to be able to point at these particular letters on the letterboard. So he spelt I want, and then he says, I want to, T-O, and then D-A-N-C-E, dance. I want to dance, and then I give him some time. He goes, W-I-T-H, with, I want to dance with, and eventually he says, I want to dance with Dad. Incredible. So when you've got a child that's been predominantly nonverbal his whole life, but is then able to tell us what he wants to do, and so what do we do? We put the pen and paper and the stencil board down and we turn the music up and we dance our asses off and we boogie away in the lounge room. That's and then we have another conversation. Yeah.
Can I just ask for a moment, how do you feel right now just reflecting on that moment as a parent, as a dad?
It's joyful. It's, I think it makes me realise that that the power of communication for so many non-verbal communicators or those that use alternative forms of communication, that the power for that communication is in the hands of their parents. And I remember talking to a brilliant young man in the United States when we made the Parenting Spectrum. And his name is called Dylan Barmash. And if you look back through what Dylan's done over the years, it's incredible stuff. And he's now going to university, and he's nonverbal. He doesn't talk as his main form of communication. And he actually made an ad with Apple that dived into his life in terms of the way that he communicates. And he learned to communicate using a similar method to Patch, and he's now transformed in terms of being able to type on an iPad to be able to express his desires, his needs, his wants, and to be able to communicate just like you and I are today, in terms of everything in his life, you know, curriculum development, you know, whatever. And Dylan said to me that we are the most important people, us as mums and dads. And he said that you have the ability to change somebody's life, and that never, ever, ever give up. Keep going. And it may take you 1,000 attempts in order to facilitate a communication in terms of a letter, but you just keep going and going and going. So how do I feel? It's a tough question to answer because I feel guilt. I feel like I need to be doing more and more and more. But I also feel that I feel great about the success that we've been able to reach together and that my son's been able to achieve. I feel a lot of pressure that I've got to keep going, even when the times are really, really tough and there's a lot of sensory needs associated with this with regards to this. Sometimes that Patch outwardly would look like he doesn't want to participate in the activity that we're doing, but he's told me that he does want to participate and that, you know, we need to keep going. We need to. This is such an important aspect of his life. So it's a range of emotions.
Yeah.
And it's harder than anything that I've ever done. You know, cross the Rocky Mountains on bicycle with my son. So it's even tougher. Yeah.
I just want to take a moment to thank you for, yeah, just being open and honest with that as well, Travis. I think it takes courage, but with courage comes a lot of that personal evolution and growth. And by the sounds of it, there's a lot of that taking place right now.
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's now our life's all about growth. You connect with like-minded souls and people that are kind of going down similar paths. And, you know, we talk about growth. One of the things I think about in terms of what's changed for us as a family, as individuals, and our whole family dynamic is those relationships that we've had over the years and how they've changed, probably more so than most families would have to go through. For starters, that we were up in the Northern Territory when we first learnt that Patch he had some differences compared to his peers. And then we moved to South Australia. We've lived in New South Wales since that time. And we've also left behind lots of friends when we've moved those states. So we've lost a lot of those support networks. So we've had to kind of dig deep in terms of finding new relationships and understanding what they really look like for our family dynamic. But we've kind of lost some friends along the way too, some by choice, some not by choice. Obviously, you go in different paths when you become a parent. And because of the values and the upbringing and behaviours and the ideals that you bring from your parents, and maybe they don't align. But for some, it's just there were some people on our journey that we couldn't fit into our lives. It was almost impossible with regards to the time that we had in our day. And our son has really not slept much of his life, so we're always exhausted. Of course, we can make excuses, but there are those relationships that, you know, we just felt let down by some friends. And one thing that having a child that is beautifully different has taught me is that I'm a more understanding and empathetic person than I was ever prior to having children. And so I guess that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, that is a very cool thing. Just on what you raised there, there's a couple of questions that come up for me, Travis. But one of them is I'm a strong believer in the old African proverb of it takes a village to raise a child. And what advice would you have for another family or a friend of parents that may have an autistic child or a child in that situation? What advice would you give to the friends around you guys? How can they support? How can they support? What sort of advice would you have for them? Because I feel like that in some ways might be a topic that might be hard to broach for some people. For friends of, especially friends before you guys became parents, and then they're still your friends once you are parents, and just that whole realm of how to support and coming together as well. What advice would you have for those people?
Well, I guess these days I talk about when I'm talking to other parents that say, for example, have autistic children. I like to kind of reflect on something that Brené Brown talks about, and she says that I'm not here to be right, I'm here to get it right. In other words, I'm not going to be the world's biggest expert about something, but I'm going to kind of sit back, I'm going to kind of take it all in, and then I'm going to do exactly what's right for my child. And so that's a really nice way of thinking about it in terms of advocacy. I'm not telling you this because I'm right, I'm actually telling you this because I think that this is the way forward in terms of our child's needs or our relationship together as human beings. And another thing that I like to talk about, it's obviously when we're talking about our relationships as parents to other friends or other members of the community, we need to kind of sit back and think about what everyone else's level of understanding is, in terms of what their understanding of disabilities and what their understanding of what autism is, when we talk about autism specifically. And we all bring in an understanding that is very, very different to the next person. And that's based on, you know, what we were taught at school, our upbringing, our relationship with our parents, the words and the language and the narrative that was spoken in the family home, in the playground. And so we all have you know, this form of bias in terms of our understanding. And so what I like to do is to kind of break it down. I like to tell people, forget about everything that you already know. And let's just look at the individual. Let's look at them as beautifully unique people. And I say to parents, first thing, your child's amazing. Your child is awesome. Your child is absolutely incredible. You don't ever let anyone ever tell you otherwise. They may be different. They may display different motor planning actions. They may look different in terms of the way that they're reacting to sensory sensitivities. They may have self-stimulatory behavior and they require to stim to self-soothe and to keep themselves calm. And that's okay. And that's a beautiful thing because it means that you embrace them. Now, if your friends aren't willing to kind of drop everything they already know about autism and stop giving you advice as to how you should parent, they're not friends. Friends are people that go, I want to learn about how I can support you. These friends are people that knock on the door and leave a meal on your doorstep because they know you haven't got any time and they've left a little note. And they know that it's going to help you that night or the next night with a frozen meal. Friends are people that listen. Friends are people that back up every time when they've asked you to go out for dinner and you can't go out for dinner for the 14th time in a row, but they still keep calling you or they still keep messaging you. And so these people, and we've come across so many of them in our lives in terms of those relationships and those friendships. Great people are people that presume that your child's competent and talk to them like they're fantastic human beings that they are. And they don't play down to what their expectations are. They raise the bar. And so I love people that think that my child's going to be successful in his life. And then I open the door to those people and those people that offer those kind of positive relationships and they offer positive associations and they use positive language around him and make him feel awesome.
That's beautiful, mate. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Time for a short reflection break. This is an opportunity for you to stop, take a breath, and reflect on your past week as a parent. If you have a pen and paper near you, that's great. If not, simply use your phone or laptop. I want you to write down three things. First, write down one moment in the past week that you were proud of yourself as a parent. Second, write down one area of your parenting that you would like to improve for the next week. Third, write down one moment from the past week where your child or children have made you smile. Be kind to yourself and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
And then going on off on something that you said before, we often, well, this is my experience coming into parenthood. I had this idea that I was going to be teaching Oscar, my three-year-old boy. We've got another one on the way now too, which we're absolutely pumped and excited about. I had this idea that I would be teaching him everything, like this, and this. And it was going to be one way sort of teaching, learning, whatever you want to call it. And I got put on my ass. I like to say that I got put on my ass in the first few months because here was this baby. And even to this day, a few years on, he's taught me more about life, like not even just about parenting, but about life than I could have ever have hoped to have taught him. What have you learned from Patch?
Yeah, so much. I think I could write a book on this and maybe one day I will. But
I think you should.
I got asked that the other day and said, look, I think I've written a few chapters in my head but with adventures and things that we've done over the years. And maybe I'll tell a little story about one of those. He taught me, first of all, that I needed to teach him using his strengths and interests. So us as a family, we were having a bit of a tough time. We've moved to New South Wales and Patch was attending a school, an autism-specific school in New South Wales, and he was having a bit of a tough time kind of finding himself. And Fiona and myself are also going through some difficulties. You know, we're finding it difficult in terms of the way that we gelled together in our relationship. We've lost and moved on from a lot of our friends. We felt alone. We felt like we didn't have those support networks. And I remember this one day, we went down to a local lake, and it was a lake that Fiona had been taking Patrick to, and she'd been kind of joined up with a local disability sailing group, and they had these 12-foot skiffs. And Fiona was going out on one of these boats with Patrick. And then there was another guy that I was sitting to, another dad, next to another dad. And his son, who was 24, was out sailing with a carer. And his son's name was Trent. And Trent would come in and he'd have a chat to dad. And he'd say, "Hey, dad, can I go out on the boat by myself?" And dad would go, "Oh, you know, not yet, Trent, not yet. You're almost there, mate. You're almost there. You'll be able to go out on that boat before you know it." And Trent, without he just met me, but he knew my name, and he said, Travis, dad says there's nothing I can't do. And then go off and go out in the boat with care. And now they did this over the next hour and a half, and Trent would come in every 10 or 15 minutes, and he'd have the same conversation with dad and then the same conversation with me. And I thought, that's a beautiful relationship. I want a piece of that action. I want that relationship that dad and that son have got, because it was one of self-respect, and it was one of they actually believed in each other, and it was one of promoting each other. And I remember going home that afternoon with Fiona in the car with Patch in the back seat, and reflecting on a guy in Victoria called Chris Varney from the ICANN network. And Chris had spoken about strength-based education for a long time with autistic individuals. And he'd start up this organisation where he was going out to schools, and he set up a mentor program, basically teaching autistic students how to use their strengths and interests and promoting those within school. And it's a marvellous program. It's kicking ass today. So it got me thinking, what is it that Fiona and I are really good at as a couple? When were we most happy in our partnership? And what is it that Patch is really, really good at? And what is he interested in? And so Fiona and myself, we were most happy when we were outdoors and we were having adventures. And for us, the most happy time that we reflected on was when we did a bicycle trip through Southeast Asia and then kicked over to Canada and cycled all the way from Canada to Mexico. It was a marvellous time, young and free. And wow. For Patrick, he loved music, he loved the great outdoors, he loved camping, and the main thing he loved was movement. Now, to give you a picture of this, is that Patrick wasn't a child that was playing. He wasn't playing with toys, but he had other passions, and these passions were moving, jumping on a trampoline, being pushed on a swing, going on a camping adventure with mum and dad, having a walk outdoors, and listening to music. And so we thought, wow, what are we going to do here? How do we put something together to bring this together so that all of our family is being looked after? And so one thing led to another. I bought a bicycle from the United States. It was called a Husser Pino semi-recumbent tandem. I sat on the back. Pat sat in a downright position. Fiona had another bicycle. And I remember the day it arrived. I put it together. Pat hopped on it. And he just laughed his head off. He was like squealing with joy, and we hadn't seen him this happy in so long. And so that 1 kilometre ride kind of kicked into 5, 10, 20, 60 Ks, putting panniers on the side of the bike, lifting the weight up, dad, me, training my backside off to get fit. And then we started to come up with an idea. What can we do with this? Because he's loving it. He's talking about the bike parts. He's using, you know, he's verbalising. He's pointing at things. He's intrinsically motivated to communicate. And so I said, why don't we go to the States? Let's go on a little kind of little bike ride. Let's maybe go on a whale trail. And so that's the idea that Fiona and I had from the start. So we bought a map of the USA, found a rail trail, got the highlighter out, and put a mark on it. And Fiona was at work, or she'd gone away or something along those lines. And I remember sitting down with Patch and going, nah, Patch, we can do better than this. If we're going to go that far, let's at least make it a heck of a journey. And so I started doing a little bit of research. And before you know it, I put a line from one side of America to the other, using a variety of rail trials and pre-existing bicycle routes. And it went from Washington State to Washington, D.C. And so that's what we did. We trained for it. We camped in the living room. We ate lots of the different types of food that we'd eat. We showed Patch videos of bears and bison and the things that he'd see on the journey. And then we kicked on over to the U.S. and rode 5,600 kilometers from one side of the USA to the other, over the North Cascades, over the Rocky Mountains, six mountain passes, across the Great Plains, around the Great Lakes, over the Appalachians, and all the way finishing outside the Australian Embassy for a crowd waiting for us, cheering us on.
Oh, that is awesome. Wow.
And Sean, you know, people say to me, you know, amazing bike trip. And I say, yeah, it was an amazing bike trip. It was more of an amazing trip of relationship and connection and learning. And for us, it was all about teaching Patch. And so I taught him using the number plates on the side of the road. I taught him about numbers. I taught him about places and what existed in those places. Halfway across, we started at a hotel one night because we were mainly camping. And this night in the hotel, he started pointing at things and then labelling them, verbalising them. That's a fire extinguisher. That's the exit sign. So we're running around the hotel, labelling absolutely everything because Patch knew it. And that's when I talk about presumption of competence. We should always presume somebody's ability rather than, you know, presume that they cannot do something. And so that trip proved to us that our son was absolutely capable of achieving anything in his life if he had the right support networks that positioned his education around his strengths and interests as opposed to teaching those deficits or those areas of weakness. And from that, he's gone on to develop so many more kind of strengths and interests. And he can now ride his own bicycle.
That's awesome.
Bloody cool.
You know what you were saying there, Travis, on presumptions, and it's so apparent in day-to-day society, whether it's in the workplace, at home, in school, whatever it might be. Like, it's a big factor, and it still is. And there's something I come across in recent years which has sort of stayed with me for this entire time, and I feel like it correlates with what you were talking about, and it's called the three mandates of leadership. And long story short, I see leadership in the workplace, in different industries, whether it be a school as well, as being very similar to the role of a parent within a family. And the role that we play as parents with young people, our children, being very similar to a supervisor, a boss, a manager these days, a leader, to their employees. And these three mandates of leadership have been really integral to the foundations of some amazing relationships that I have in my life at the moment. And number one is seeing it as it is. So whatever that we see in front of us, whatever situation that it is, being able to try and see it as it is, as plainly as it is, instead of attaching that story that we so often do. And then the second mandate, and these all expand as well, but the second mandate is to see it better than it is. And I feel like that pairs nicely with what you were talking about before, because it is you experience so much more joy in life when you see things better than what you've actually seen it as. And the third step is always make it the way you see it. So now that you see it better, make it that way. Pair it with some action. Don't just leave it with a thought or a theory. Let's pair it with some action and make it the way you see it. And I'm just going to say it, like, you're a beautiful person, mate. We've been talking for 30 minutes, honestly, Travis, and that's just coming through loud and clear. We're on a Zoom call, like every man, woman, and cat and dog over the past sort of six to 9 months has been on Zoom calls. But I can just feel that you're you've taken many different situations, whatever you want to call them, and you've seen them as they are, you've seen them better than they are, and you're pairing it with action, with that bike trip, that family experience just being a classic example of that. So hats off to you, mate. Like, that's awesome. I just want to acknowledge you for that too.
And what you're talking about there kind of really fits in well in terms of my ideology, in terms of when I'm running workshops, but also the way that we run our lives. And we base it off appreciative inquiry. So it's along the lines of, you know, it's a positive narrative. So it's not what worked well and how can we do more of the same, rather than let's concentrate on not what's not working, because you're not going to get anywhere by concentrating on that. It's almost pointless. And so I think if families kind of consider that, because there are so many hiccups that come along the way and so many struggles and trials and tribulations for so many families, and everyone's different and everyone's situation is different. But if we kind of take a step back when those times stuff go, okay, you know, what is it that works really well in your family? Okay, well, how the heck are we going to do more of that? Let's do that. And by doing that, you automatically take a lot of that stuff out. I know, like, for so many families, there's so many issues with regards to social media and people spending too much time online and feeling too connected online. And if you start to look at what is it that we really love doing, you'll actually stop spending more time on social media, of course, if that's not something that you love doing. By looking at it and flipping it, we change our whole outlook and behavior.
Totally. Well, just talking about the social media side of things, I'm not sure if you guys watch Netflix or anything like that. I watched the Social Dilemma recently, which is obviously the flavor of the month at the moment. And it's interesting, just the question that you asked there, like what do you love doing? And I feel like underpinning social media is a love for connecting with people, whether it's those that we already know or connecting with new people. But it's obviously taken some turns on that road now that has led to the society as we know it now, especially in the Western world. But if you take that love for connecting with people, and like you said, then you look at it as it is, and okay, how else can we do that? Like, what are some other ways of connecting with people? And then we start talking about actually seeing people in person, being able to try new things, try new experiences. And you've taken exactly what doesn't work, which is social media, if that's the way one sees it, and you've spun what you love about it, and you've turned it into something that could be really prosperous and healthy for you and really amazing for your family or whatever it might be. It's it is pretty simple when you break it down. Like, it doesn't have to be complex, does it?
Yeah. Look, I think I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship, I think, as most people have with social media. I think I'm a work in progress. I've got a long way to go in terms of being able to manage the way that I use it. Look, I've got a kind of a business/a life page, which is called School of the Road on Facebook, and that's great, and that's where I tell stories and tips and ideas and talk about things that Patch and I are up to and throw business concept out through that platform. But I've also got another page, which is Travis Saunders, the adventure page, but it's more like a business page. And then I've got my own personal Facebook site, which I don't interact with friends on. Now, that sounds really, really unusual. I'll interact in terms of making a comment with regards to what they're up to, but I never, ever post on it. I haven't posted on it for years. And I must have about 100 friend requests just sitting there. And I don't want to invite them into my life in a social format, because I know that it kind of zaps and takes away time me looking at what they're doing. And it takes away from us having fun as a family. But it also takes away from me connecting with people face-to-face or on telephone and or via letter, believe it or not. And they're important things for me, those traditional forms of connection. And most of these people realise that. Most of these people know that I don't connect in that form, but I do make the effort and time to call them to see how they're going. And I think that makes more of an impact on their life and my life than them seeing me on a bike trip or me seeing what they ate for dinner. And that when we actually get together, we're actually having a conversation about things that we have no idea what the other person's been up to. And so the conversation just takes a whole new kind of world. It just goes in lots of different directions because none of us know what each other's been up to.
Well, there's an element of mystery there, isn't there?
Yeah. And so that's exciting. But social media for me has been a great thing in terms of advocacy, in terms of connecting with people that have similar lifestyles to what I have. And it's also in terms of being connected with what's going on in terms of autism research and different autism groups and what's available to support networks for my son. So I've had to stay connected.
Mm.
But the best example I can think of in terms of when social media has meant the most to me is that when I was traveling across America with Fiona and Pat, we'd pulled over the side of the road. And a guy had come up to us. He hadn't heard about us. He kind of met up with us the traditional way, just by bumping into each other. And he was really excited about what we were doing on the bike trip. Now, he had a nephew that was autistic, and so he was really excited about what this trip meant. And he put us up in his house, and we kind of hung out with him. He threw us the car keys and let us tiki tour around his town and check out what was going on. Now, we connected with each other at that point on social media, and then he followed the rest of our trip. Now, we spent 79 days on the bike, and we're only about a month into that trip. 2 months later, he gets in contact with me and he says, Trev, he says, I want to kind of see you at the finish line. So he flew from one side of America to the other, borrowed a mate's pickup truck, drove 11 hours, and then was our support crew on the road going into Washington, D.C. for the last 3 days, even hired a push bike to ride with us.
Wow.
That wouldn't have happened without social media.
Oh, it gives me chills, man.
You know, and, awesome. And I've never met anyone like him. And these days I tell that story all the time because I think, you know, I remember he jumped out of the bushes at one stage in a forest with with some fries, the McDonald's fries. It was hilarious.
Little pick me up for the last leg.
yeah, definitely.
Wow, that's heavy. I could keep talking for hours. I do have a couple of other questions that have popped up, and I know you're a busy person, so I'll ask those, and then maybe we can talk about a 2.0 at some point. It'd be awesome to chat to Fiona as well, obviously, and yeah, really expand on what we've started here as well. With, I feel like just from our chat, I've gathered that you're a big dreamer, like a big thinker, and you don't just sort of look at things within sort of box. It sounds like it's quite natural for you to go big with things, and that's something I connect with. And I'm curious, from like a parenting point of view, what are your thoughts on the changes that you think the parenting world will experience in the future? So let's look at, sort of 40, 50, 60 years. From your point of view, do you see there being any changes in the parenting world, in your parenting world, whatever it might be? What comes to mind for you?
Yeah, Charles? Look, I think I could talk about this on so many different levels. It's in terms of, I'll talk about on the human level rather than just the parenting level. We're starting to see a bit of a cultural transformation in terms of inclusiveness and what that looks like, and in terms of understanding about diversity and disability. And it can't happen quick enough. And we're starting to see that in schools and in workplaces and in society. It's needed. It absolutely needs to happen. It can't happen quick enough. And so I think in 40 years from now, I'm hoping that children like my son have social justice for being discriminated against for their differences, that they do have things in place that are successful in businesses and in workplaces, and parents from the start, when a child diagnosed with a disability, that they've got a positive narrative straight away, because that the cultural dialogue from the previous generations has actually embraced those differences as being something positive, as opposed to, you've got a child with a disability, this is what your life will look like. Well, it's completely wrong. A new person every day, or talking to a new person every day who has a child with disability, and people with disabilities are capable. They are keeping backside in terms of what they can do in their workplace. They're just like you and me, and they're continuing to prove that. And so I want society to open up. We are a better society. When we accommodate people's needs, we are better people. When we accommodate people's differences, and that when we teach to those strengths, and our workplaces are more profitable, they're more pleasurable places to be in. There's no longer that blokey bloke football type of change room type culture and those discussion groups around differences. It's one of where people are talking about others in a positive way, and they're also skilled up on how to talk to anyone that uses that language inappropriately to make people responsible and accountable for their actions as to how their words can affect others. You know, for example, have they referred to somebody being less than and what that means? And so they're more empathetic. So that's what I'd like for the entire world to look like. In terms of we chatted about social media, we have to have a big change in the future. It has to occur. I think we're at a crossroads in terms of what social media means to us as individuals, how we interact with it, and what it's doing to society. And so we have to learn to use it better. And we have to learn to be more accountable as to the way we use it. But the organisations that have established the platforms, they also have to take on more a higher level of accountability as to the impact that their platforms are having on people's mental health. And that's us, mums and dads, because the more time we spend on that, the more time we're not spending with our kids.
And the flow on begins.
Most definitely.
Yeah. That's awesome. But there's always one question that I love to wrap up with. And that is, let's go back in time together, Travis. Let's go back in time to before you were a parent to young Patch. If you could travel back to that time with one piece of advice for your pre-parent self, would that advice be?
Tough one. This is a really, really tough question in terms of I would believe that piece of advice for me is don't doubt yourself. As a parent, trust your gut instinct. If it doesn't feel right, it's not right. Don't wait 2 weeks or a month or 3 months or a year to facilitate a change. If you're having somebody that's working with your child or you're doing something with your child and it doesn't feel right, change it up. Make that change. Because if you stay doing the same thing, nothing changes.
I always love that question because there's always something different that comes out of it. And you never know that there might be that one person, whether they're on that parenting, their own parenting journey at the moment, or they're becoming parents or they're thinking about one day becoming parents. I feel no matter what answer you get, there's always some sort of value to take from that. And I'm a big believer in power of proximity as well, in learning from others that have gone before us. So.
Definitely, definitely. And on that point, if you're a parent of an autistic child, the biggest thing that I've learned, if I could turn back time, is to, from day one, ensure that I'm surrounding myself with as many autistic individuals as possible, that I'm reading their material, I'm listening to and taking in the commentary of autistic people from all around the world that have got lots of different experiences, because out of those experiences, we're going to be able to relate those in some sense to our own child's experiences and our own experiences as parents. So listen to those that have walked the walk before us and talk to people with lived experiences.
Well, on that note, Travis, we always finish with a segment called Time to Plug Off. And basically, that segment is all about, for any of our listeners out there that have enjoyed what you've had to say, that would like to ask you any questions, but where can they find your work? Where can they connect with you? And tell us a little bit about what's next for you as well in your world.
Yeah, cool. So obviously, I'm Vice Chair of Autism Camp Australia, so you can find us on Facebook there. I run my own Facebook site called School of the Road. It's a bit of a play on words, not School of the Air.
Because get onto it, people.
Fiona was a journalist and I was an educator, so we kind of put the two together, School of the Road, and we love cycling. So, you can find a little bit about us too on workingwithparents.com.au. And that's where we run our workshops and training seminars for allied health professionals, educators and parents so that we can develop better working relationships together so children with disabilities can thrive. And on that note, we've been doing those workshops for quite a while now. And early next year, we will be releasing our online e-learning platform with lots of different modules, which will contain video, audio, infographics, exercises. It'll be hands-on, almost university-style produced curriculum, and you'll receive certificates for your completion of those units, and that'll be available for schools and NDIS providers and also parents. And keep a lookout for that by following us on School of the Road. It's probably the biggest project and the most exciting project that I've ever worked on that'll make more of a difference in the lives of parents than anything I've ever done or ever seen. So a lot of work to do yet, but we're getting there. So check it out.
That's awesome. Get onto it, people. School of the Road. We will have the link in the episode description as well. But honestly, I have no doubt if this chat is any indication of the passion and energy you have for young people, just for the betterment of all people, it's coming through loud and clear. So again, I appreciate your time, Travis, and just want to send well wishes across to Fiona and Patch as well, and look forward to hopefully another chat very soon.
Thank you for listening. Let us know if anything stood out for you during the chat. As the new pod on the block, it would be awesome if you look out for us and share this episode with someone that you think may be interested. While you're at it, why not head to our socials and share some love with a like, follow, or comment? Keep an eye out for the next pod drop. Big thanks to Stilo Media for producing this piece of art we call Sounding Board Parenting. From our hearts to yours, we hope you're making progress on something that you love and makes you feel alive. Remember, this can go anywhere.